And so just before I start, let me just make a brief comment. In the tutorial, one of the problems that we looked at, or you looked at, was that you had a function which was something like this. Well, this was the function exactly. And what were the branch points of this function? So if I look at just this bit, then that gives us that there should be a branch point at z equals to 0. And then if I look at the whole thing, then there should be a branch point at the value of square root of z equals to minus 1. Now, minus 1 is one of the roots of 1. So that gives us z equals to 1. And if you look at a value of z which is large, then this function looks like and then if you do the usual trick of mapping infinity to a finite region of the complex plane, you can see that you also have a branch point at infinity. So basically, what it'll look like is you have a pole, sorry, not a pole, a branch point here, a branch point here, and branch cuts going out all the way to infinity. And if you look at the branch point at infinity, you see that it's a four-sheeted Riemann surface. It's actually quite complicated how to go between these two things, so you can think more about that. Anyway, so we are quickly running out of time. We'll get to doing actually explicit contour integrals, not today, but the next time. But today, we want to discuss probably one of the most important results in the field, which is Cauchy's theorem. Now, before I give you a very brief proof of Cauchy's theorem, let me remind you Stokes' theorem in two dimensions. So suppose you have A, which is a two-dimensional vector. So it's a 2D vector whose components are continuous. And its first derivative exists. Or first derivatives, the components. Then, if this is true in some, say, simply connected region D, so D is simply connected, which means that there are no holes. So, for example, that's a simply connected region, the inside. But if you exclude this region, this bit, then that's not simply connected anymore. And let C be a closed curve, which is the boundary of this simply connected region. Then the integral, so this means that the integral around a closed circuit of A around the contour C is the surface integral of the curl of this vector A. Right. So I'm using three-dimensional notation here, but it should be obvious what I mean. So written in components, this is AX dx plus by dy. And this integral is over d. So this is Stokes' theorem, and I think everybody has seen this. Has everyone seen Stokes' theorem? Okay. It usually is taught part of basic E&M sometimes. Okay. Oh, undo. Okay. So, so now suppose that f of z is a holomorphic function, and if the first derivative is continuous, then we can consider a simply connected region on the complex plane and draw a contour and consider the contour that surrounds is the boundary to that simply connected region, and then apply Stokes' theorem to the real and imaginary part of this guy. So we have, so I won't go through all the boring algebra here, but if you just do a couple of lines of algebra and apply Stokes' theorem to the real and imaginary part, you will end up with this expression. Now recall that yesterday we figured out that d by dx was the sum of dz, d by dz, and d by dz bar, and similarly d by dy was I d by dz minus I d by dz bar. So inverting these things, we see that this guy is nothing but 2 times I d by dz bar. So that thus we get that we get 2 I d by dz bar f of z dx dy, and since z is holomorphic, this is equal to 0. Sorry? Sorry? Oh, there's an I sum. Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Right, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, well, then this going from here to here does matter, right? Anyway, so that implies that, so what we have shown is that for a holomorphic function, so for a function f of z, which is holomorphic in the simply connected region, D, enclosed by C, the contour C, and this is Cauchy's theorem. There is a longer, different proof of this theorem which doesn't assume this, which follows from the theorem, which I will not go into. So once we have Cauchy's theorem, it's for a simply connected region, it's very easy to see that this theorem also applies for multiply connected regions. And it's a good exercise to see that because it shows you the kind of manipulations that you'll often have to do in this field. So suppose we have some multiply connected region. So, so we have some contour C1 and some contour C2 and C3. Now, although I have not gone into this, but when I write a usual contour like that, I think of going in the counterclockwise direction. So here, the bigger contour is we are going in the counterclockwise direction, where in the smaller contours, we are going in the clockwise direction. So the assumption is that f of z is holomorphic in this region. So f of z is holomorphic in this region. We don't care about what's happening here or here. Then it's easy to see that C1 So how do we see that? Basically, we can introduce some crosscuts. So here we go down this way and go down this way. So if we instead So now I have I've changed the contour in such a way that it's no longer a multiply connected region, right? Because you can go in this direction and then come back, come down, go here. So this is not multiply connected because you can't draw a loop which cannot be continuously shrunk to a zero size. For example, this is a multiply connected region because you can draw a loop, say like this, which you cannot shrink continuously to a zero size. Whereas here, you cannot do that. Before we introduced the crosscuts, you could, because you could draw something around it. But now, the crosscut has changed the topology of the region. Now by taking these crosscuts to be very, very close to each other, and because the sense in which we do the integration along this path is opposite in the sense that we do the integration along this path, the contribution of the contribution to the integral. So let's call this whole thing, say, gamma. So if we do gamma, the contribution from this bits and this bits can be made to be arbitrarily small. And thus, we see that when we do that, that this is actually equal to the integral over C1 and minus the integral over C2 minus the integral over C3. So where all these integrals are taken, where we are in the counterclockwise sense. And because this side was, this integral was done, this contour integral is on a simply connected region, and where f of z is holomorphic, so this was equal to zero. So from which we said conclude that this is equal to zero, and therefore we arrive at this region. So Cauchy's theorem can also be applied to a multiply connected region. Now I won't go into this, but I won't go into the detail of the proof. But an extremely important result, which follows from Cauchy's theorem, is the Yes? Yes, big gamma is the sum of the curves, including the crosscuts. Yeah, so when you. So, what's the question?
which is C1 plus C2 plus C3.
Okay, sorry, I haven't been very explicit here. Right, so, okay. So when I say, okay, when I say this is C, say, C2 F of Z D of Z, what I mean is you go around C2 in the counterclockwise direction, right? And right. No, hang on. So, yeah, but you see, okay. So gamma is you go around here. But what? But.
And the surface is always inside there, so it will not be all of them.
Okay. Okay. Right. Okay, let me just do this more explicitly, okay? Let's, rather than just start talking about this. So let's just take one, just for simplicity, one of the things. So let's call this, say, C1, and this is C2, and this is A, and this is B. So we go like that, and then we go down here, and then go like this, here, and here. So according to Cauchy's theorem, we have f of z of d of z is 0. And then this we divide up into C1. And then this we this is A. And this is, right. So here, this is C2. Now, see that, so if I put like a close contour, like a loop on that symbol, what I mean is that if I were to take the whole, if I were to close this loop, then I would be doing the integral in the counterclockwise direction. Now, when I'm doing this integral within the contour gamma, I have to do the integral in a clockwise direction. But I've defined the symbol in a way that I do the integral in a counterclockwise direction. Yeah?
I seem to recall that when I write those integrals like you do, I even put a little arrow on my screen.
Right, right.
In the integrand.
Yes.
So that it's totally obvious.
Right, right. So, yeah, so that's what I should do.
And that way, then you need the minus sign.
Yeah, and then if I want to turn this.
No,
then I need a minus.
Yeah, minus.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, this would be then B, and then these guys will cancel. And, okay? Yeah, just go through it in detail, and you'll see that everything is fine, that Cauchy's theorem does hold in multiply connected region. So, the Cauchy's theorem then leads to, for holomorphic functions in, so suppose we have a holomorphic function in, a function that is holomorphic in some region, then it leads to the following formula. So suppose you have a closed contour C, and let's take a point A, which is located inside the contour. Then the value of a holomorphic function at a point A inside that region is given by this formula. So in other words, if you know the value of a holomorphic function on the boundary of some region, you know the value of the function inside the region. And that's basically quite a surprising and quite an amazing consequence of the Cauchy-Riemann equations. And this formula is known as the Cauchy integral formula. And then you can do you can differentiate under the integral sign, and then you can then the nth, if you have if you take the nth derivative of f of z, which is often written like f of n of z, then that's given by, so I'm going to switch the integration variable to t now. So for a holomorphic functions, all the derivatives exist. And they're given by this expression. Now, if a holomorphic function is if a function is holomorphic in a simply connected region, then you can find sorry, yeah. Thank you. So, so given this formula, you can actually go and prove that that Taylor's theorem for holomorphic function on disks. And so you can go and if a function is holomorphic around a point A, is holomorphic on a disk, around a point A, then the expression for that holomorphic function in the neighborhood around that point A is given by this infinite series. Where this f of n are given by this formula. Now, it's a nice example, very simple example to see a failure of the Taylor expansion. So if let's take a simple example. So let's take a very simple function like the Lorentzian. So this is the pictures that I'm about to show you is from Pedro's talks from last year. And I highly recommend that at some point you go and watch Pedro's lectures on complex analysis from last year. They're extremely fast-paced paced, and they're extremely good. But so let's so consider the function, the Lorentzian, which is say x squared plus 1. I have not bothered to normalize it. So on the real line, this is a well-defined function, but there is a singularity. There are two singularities of this function on the complex plane, and the singularities are at plus minus I. So the radius of convergence of this function is the unit disk around the origin, right? If you ask for the Taylor expansion of this function around the origin, that expansion is going to be valid only on a disk of unit radius. And let me see if I can get the... And we can do applied mathematical experiments to see that. So I have, okay, it'll take a few seconds to warm up. So what I have here is a Mathematica file. And so the first line, I've defined a Lorentzian. And then this is what the Lorentzian looks like. And then in the over here, I have truncated the Taylor series of this function at the fifth term. So because it's an even function, the z to the power 5, the odd powers of z are not, you can't really see them. Okay. And then here I'm plotting both the function and the and the power series expansion of this. So as you can see, as you're near the origin, it's a good approximation, but as you go towards say 1, it kind of goes away and it diverges quite dramatically. So this is just using five terms in the series. Now I can do this for 6 terms. It's again, it's a good approximation in this region, but as you approach 1, it diverges quite dramatically from the Lorentzian. But the way that the six term approximation diverges from as compared to the 5 term is quite dramatic, because it just goes in completely opposite direction. So you're going to suspect that if this behavior keeps on continuing, that you're not going to have much luck going beyond x equals to plus 1, z equals to plus 1 and minus 1. And indeed, that is the case. So here what I've done is that this is for general n, well, n going from 0 to 4 to 20, and I've used the Mathematica, the really cool Mathematica command called manipulate, which lets us see all these cases from 4 to 20. So now if I run this, so what manipulate does is that it lets you manipulate the parameter L, which here is the order at which I am truncating my series. So let me run this. So this starts from 4 and goes to 20. As you can see, as it goes from 4 to 20, this actually, you can see that this is not, the approximation even when you're taking higher and higher order term, the approximation around the point z equals to 1 and z equals to minus 1 is not really improving. And of course, you don't expect to improve because Taylor's series is going to break down at z equals to 1. Why? Because in the complex plane, there it has singularities. So this is a nice kind of a dramatic, and you can do this with any, any function whose Taylor series you know. So, so Taylor series allows you to it's valid for simply connected region. So suppose you have a function which has a singularity at this point and at this point. So what you can find a Taylor series in a disk bounded by these guys. But what about, say, in some region like this? Can you find a series expansion for for that function? Now, intuitively, you would expect yes, because if this function blows up here, if it has a singularity here, then maybe in the expansion, some kind of series expansion of the function, you have, say, suppose this point is A, you have some term which is like, in the expansion, you have some term like this where n is a positive power. You know, it's very possible, right? And it turns out that yes, there is such a series, a representation of functions in annular regions. So for annular regions, so this is basically an annulus is basically a strip. So this is an annulus. Now, as far as we are concerned, this is the inner radius, and this is the outer radius. As far as we are concerned, the outer radius R2 can be infinity. Now, in annular region, a holomorphic function is given by a series which symbolically I'm going to write as this. What is important about this series is that it goes from minus infinity to plus infinity in principle. And this series is called Lorentz series. Now, I want to emphasize that a general Lorentz series has negative powers of, so this is negative powers of powers of z minus a. So this is a Lorentz series expansion for f of z around a. And the coefficients in the Lorentz series, these a's, the formal expressions for them are given by something very similar to the Cauchy integral formula. So a of n is actually given by the same expression as over there. Although here you're doing the contour integral on a region which is not simply connected. So if this is your A, then you're taking the contour like this. So this is C. So let's look at a few examples of Laurent series. In general, there doesn't seem to be any algorithm for finding the Laurent series for a given function. You just, sometimes you have to use, you have to look at the function and see if you can find a part of the function which has a well-defined Taylor expansion and go from there. So let's look at the, so let's look at the Laurent series of the function 1 over sine of z around z equals to 0. Now, what you do is that you basically expand the Taylor series for sine of z around z equals to 0. So the name for Taylor series around the origin is known as the Maclaurin series. So you have something like this. And then you apply the binomial theorem to the first few terms. And then basically, okay, before you do that, so you factor out a z. So you factor out z, and then you have and then you use the binomial theorem. So where this guy comes from the higher order term from here, and this is basically this term. Anyway, you can go on, and in the end, what you have is 1 over z plus z to the pi 6 plus 7 over 360 z cubed, looks like that. So this is the Laurent series of this function around the origin. Now, remember that last time we saw that if you did the integral this was 2 pi I if n was minus 1, 0 otherwise. For a contour which surrounds the origin. So we can now take this function and integrate it around a small loop, a closed loop around the origin, and what would be the result? So can somebody tell me? What's the result of this, if you take this function? There's only one negative power, and so it'll be the same, right? So this is, So this is symptomatic of a much more general phenomena. So suppose you had a general, some arbitrary function with a Laurent series like that, and then you basically did a contour integral around the point A, then all the terms in the Laurent series would drop out except the term which had, the exponent n was minus 1, right? So in other words, a contour integral around a singularity will give you, so for an arbitrary function, the contour integral around some singular point, so say C around the singular point A, let's not put A, let's put something else, Z naught, will give you the, sorry, 2 pi I A1, right? So it turns out that for these sort of integrals, the term that we are interested in the Laurent series is the A minus 1 term, the coefficient of the 1 over Z minus A. So this is so important that we give it a name. So A minus 1 is called the residue. So this is called the residue of the function f at the singular point. And most of the integrals, all the integrals that you do using complex analysis is actually just calculating this term, A minus 1. So basically, so that means that you actually need to look at the Laurent series of the function around singularities. So this leads us to the following very useful theorem, which is known as the Cauchy's residue theorem. And so what it says is that suppose that you have a contour inside which you have a finite number of singularities for your function, which is otherwise holomorphic, then the integral of that function on this contour is given by the sum of all the residues of the function f of z at these singular points inside the contour. So basically, the way to do this integral is to take the function, look at the Laurent series expansion around each of these singular points, pick out the A minus 1 for each of these Laurent series expansion, and then multiply each of these by 2 pi I and then sum them up. So that's basically a way of cheating. You're actually not doing an integral at all. What you're doing is that you're looking at the series expansion around singular points and looking at the coefficient of the term 1 over z minus z naught, where z naught is a singular point, and that coefficient is the residue, and you're adding up all the residues. So residues, understanding and manipulating and calculating residues of functions become central to the whole subject now. And the aspect that we are interested in, we are interested in doing calculations using complex analysis, right? Because although complex analysis is very beautiful at the end of the day, for physicists, mathematics is nothing but a handmaiden. So we just want to use mathematics. And so let's just go on and discuss a little bit the different types of residues. Okay, I'm going to erase that front. So I'm going to briefly discuss the different types of singularities that you can get for holomorphic functions. And this classification depends on lecture to lecture, from book to book. So my classification would be the most simple classification. The first type of singularity are known as poles, or essential or non-essential singularities. So suppose you have a singular point A. So A is a, okay, sorry, before I go on, let me just mention something which I think is a conceptual point, which may or may not be subtle, depending on the person. So suppose that you have two singular points, A and B. The Laurent series expansion of a given function around the point A may not be, is not the same as the Laurent series expansion around B. But once you have found, by whatever method, the Laurent series expansion around a singular point, say A, you're guaranteed that is the unique series. So once you've found, by whatever method, the Laurent series around some point, that is the unique Laurent series around that singular point. But the series may be very different around B. Anyway, so suppose A is a singular point. Now, if the Laurent series around A terminates at a finite value of this exponent n. So if the Laurent series terminates at a finite value of negative n, so n doesn't go off to all minus infinity, but say to some finite value, then we say that that singularity is a pole or a non-essential singularity. So we have a minus n minus 1 This integer, the n, the positive integer n, is called the order of the pole. So n is the order of the pole. And if the value of n is 1, then it's called a simple pole. And I'll spare you the joke about the simple pole on a complex plane. Pole as in Polish, plane as in an airplane. So this is one type of singularity. The other type of singularity is called essential singularity. Okay, before I go to essential singularity, these sort of singularities are also called removable singularities. And why are they called removable? Because if you consider the function g of z, which is z minus a to the power n f of z, then this is not singular at a anymore. So the other type of singularity is essential. Singularities or I would call them like monster singularities. And an example, so essential singularities are singularities whose Lorentz series does not terminate at finite value of negative n. And the canonical example for this is this guy. There is no factor you can, so there's a horrible singularity at z equals to zero, and you can't really multiply by anything to get rid of that. And I think there's a theorem that as you approach z equals to zero, you go through all the values, all the points on the complex plane without, you know, a modulo of one or two points, right? Picard's theorem or something like that. Sorry? Okay. Okay, so how much time do I have left? I have 10 minutes. Awesome. So one type of complex functions that you come across or you hear about quite a lot in physics are meromorphic functions. So meromorphic functions are functions whose holomorphic functions, well, functions whose poles are only on the finite part of the complex plane. So for example, a very simple example of a meromorphic function would be, say, z minus 2 to the power cubed. This doesn't have a pole at infinity. Sorry? Oh, could I spell? Oh, yeah, you mean like literally? Meromorphic. I just think it's a very cool sounding name, meromorphic. So, So how do we calculate residues? So in the last 10 minutes, 5 or 10 minutes that I have, let me get into that. Well, you basically have to look at the function you're dealing with and see how you can pick out the a minus one term. So suppose that we, for simple poles, suppose we have f of z, which is, so it's for simple poles, it'll be, sorry, a minus of 1. So there'll be something like this. And then we have a0 and a1. Higher order terms. So then the residue of this guy is formally, so residue of f of z at is the limit where z goes to z naught this is basically. So for higher order residues, for higher order poles, sorry, you have, say, suppose the order is M. And if you think for a minute, so you'll see that the residue of this guy is given by limit of z goes to z naught. This is a So this formula is for higher order poles. So something that another type of function that crops up quite frequently are rational functions. So rational functions are ratios of polynomials, and yes. Okay. You guys must have been falling asleep or something. So if and we are assuming that there are no common factors in these guys, or they have been taken out, and then if z naught is a zero for Q, then that's going to be a simple pole. If it's if the multiplicity of the zero is one, then that's going to be a simple pole. And so the residue of this is basically given by using what's this called, L'Hopital's rule or something. Okay, so I think I have about a few more minutes left. Yeah, I have about 2 minutes left, and let me do another, a very simple calculation. So, let us go back to our next time. We'll do a lot more fancy, like examples. So let's go back to our Lorentzian. So this Lorentzian, where A is real, so this has two simple poles at z equals to IA and at minus IA. Then the residue of f of z at z equals to IA is, you take the limit of z going to IA, multiply by z minus of IA, multiply it to the function, and this guy will cancel this guy, leaving limit z going to I of A, z plus of I of A, which is 1 over 2 of I of A. Okay. And similarly for for the residue at this other point, we'll just get minus, we'll get minus a 1 over 2 I of A. Okay, so I'll stop there, and next time we'll do examples of how to use contour integrals to do integrals.